Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast with Mark Pearson. We're doing a three-part mini-series on the four simple steps to start investing like a pro. The last podcast, PRO, by the way, is an acronym. We went over what the P stood for. And I have Mark take over that here in just a second and remind us what the last podcast was. But today, we're going to talk about the R. And the interesting thing is the interplay between the P, R, and the O, which will be the third podcast. So, Mark, tee us up again. Why don't you remind us a little bit about what the four Ps were and then how they apply to the four R's that we're going to go over today.
You bet. So the four P's were our portfolio holdings, price swings, predictions, and performance. And of course, we went into understanding as portfolio holdings, how do investors view the underlying businesses that they own in their portfolio? And of course, I said, a lot of people don't even know what businesses they own or why. And then we went to the price swings where we talked about how do investors view volatility, right? Then we went to the predictions and how investors view and consider the market strategist predictions of the future. And of course, last performance, how do investors view their performance and compare the performance of the securities they own within their portfolio? So that's the four P's.
Okay. And the four R's, as you closed out the last podcast, you gave us a little bit of a preview of the philosophical underpinnings of these R's. Would you mind doing that again?
Yep. You got it. So you've got the renters, risk, reliability, reliable, and return benchmarks. Now understand, obviously, in the P's, the portfolio holdings correspond with the renters. Price swings correspond with the risk in R. Predictions correspond with the reliable of the R, and performance corresponds with the return benchmarks.
Dude, you really thought this through. Like, things are starting to like, oh my God, they're becoming more clear.
Isn't that what is supposed to happen?
Yes. When we were preparing for the podcast, I honestly didn't realize that they were all going to be in line like that. That's freaking awesome, dude.
Well, thank you.
You always impress me with this stuff, dude. Sometimes you're like, hey, Matt, we're going to talk about this. And then we're halfway through the podcast. I'm like, oh my God, this guy is on fire. This is freaking awesome.
Well, thank you. You're way too kind to me. You need to talk to my wife.
All right, let's go through these R's. Let's start with renters.
Right. So renters, most investors unfortunately view their portfolio holdings from the perspective of a renter of commingled funds versus that of an owner of a business, like as we discussed in portfolio holdings. Wall Street prefers renters so as to generate trades and more profits. We've all heard the idea, right, that renting is more expensive than owning, right?
Yep.
So there's costs associated with renting versus ownership in something. And because I believe investors don't know what they own, they don't know why they own it, the problem that comes about is investors begin to make decisions inaccurately. They begin to make emotional decisions as opposed to prudent decisions. They begin to act quickly, react, as opposed to be proactive. And of course, business owners view a down year, a down period in their business, assuming long-term fundamentals hasn't changed, right, as an opportunity to invest in their business, to continually invest in their business. Where renters have a tendency to say, geez, this has gotten too expensive or too, I don't like this neighborhood anymore. I'm moving out of this and I'm moving somewhere else and I'm going to go rent somewhere else. And have you ever thought about the idea when an investor or bluntly even an advisor, right, moves a client from one fund to another or one portfolio manager to another when they don't even know what that portfolio is doing, why that portfolio manager is owning a particular business. Now, it's not to say that a portfolio manager is going to be right every time. No one's going to be. But I find it interesting that investors will move from one place to another without even knowing what they're selling, and then going and not even knowing what they're buying, right? Because they don't know what they own and why they own, because they're in mutual funds and exchange traded funds, right?
But doesn't that kind of go back to the other P's of predictions and almost like a performance promise? I mean, isn't that why advisors are moving you from one? It's either not performing well enough, or there's something fundamentally wrong that they want to move you to another mutual fund, or they went on a, I'm air quoting here, due diligence trip, and you know they were convinced that that's the new way to invest.
Or maybe they're just trying to justify their job.
No, oh, you went in a very good place on that. That was awesome.
Right. So the reality is, when you sell something and you don't even know what you're selling, and then you go buy something else, you don't even know what you're buying, give me the justification. Well, here's what they'll say. Well, the performance has been really bad. Okay. Do you know why the performance was bad? Most of them won't be able to tell you. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they can't tell you is because they don't know what was owned in the portfolio. And a lot of times the decisions that are made for poor performance are made over short periods of time. Do you know that in our investment policy statement, it states that if you are going to be a long-term investor, you have to give the portfolio 7 to 10 years to allow it to fully mature and nurture itself, to fully work out all the kinks to do what it's supposed to do?
Hmm.
Do investors wait 7 to 10 years?
No.
No.
Do advisors? No, they don't wait. Before.
They probably don't even read the investment policy statement, which in that of itself is a problem.
Yeah.
Right? We live in a world where people think like renters. And the problem with the industry, in my opinion, just my opinion, as broker dealers are trying to figure out ways to keep themselves profitable in an ever-changing industry, the growth of TAMPs, right, in the marketplace are growing more and more. And what does a TAMP, in my opinion, what does a TAMP promote? By the way, a TAMP is an acronym for a turnkey asset management program. It is a platform where advisors, investors can move from one money manager to the next by just clicking a couple buttons. So now we're making investment decisions by ease of clicking buttons. Is that not what we're saying?
Yeah, that sounds terrifying to me.
But isn't that what's happening?
Yeah, totally.
Or we're making investment decisions by algorithms that were created,
mm-hmm.
right? Looking at technicals and buying and selling blocks of index ETFs because of those algorithms. This is the reality we are living in. Yet, advisors struggle with the idea of how do I justify my job? And I don't mean that in a negative way. I shouldn't even say justify my job. How do I bring value? How do I differentiate myself from other financial advisors? What makes me different? What am I doing here that's different? And of course, you know this. A lot of financial advisors will sit down and try to woo you with all their knowledge about the ETFs and the markets and indexes and this and that. Quite frankly, most investors don't even understand half of it, and the other half don't even care. What investors are really wanting to know are my investments doing the best they can, and am I on track to have the financial future I want to have?
So getting away from thinking like a renter and thinking like an owner really does make an enormous amount of sense to, simple steps to start investing like a pro. Now, the second one, when we were in the P's, the second one was price swings. And now we're going to talk about risk. What does that mean?
Well, most investors, unfortunately, view price swings as risk, right? I mean, we talk about that all the time to their portfolios as opposed to being opportunistic and essential. See, I have always said that volatility is not risk. Let me tell you why, because I talked about it in the last podcast. Volatility should not be construed as risk. If you've done the appropriate job in the suitability questionnaire or the fiduciary questionnaire in the beginning, and you were honest about answering the questions, the allocation should have been established to the level that whatever happens from a volatility standpoint should not impact you. Because you are sticking to a plan, you're sticking to a process, right? So why is it then that investors get concerned and view price swings as risk? It's because, I mean, at the end of the day, academia props up investment theory as factual so as to stay relevant in the eyes of the public. Investment theory. Remember modern portfolio theory, which is the way a lot of financial advisors manage portfolios? I believe that investors view volatility as risk, even though they've gone through all the work on a suitability or a fiduciary questionnaire, because they don't know what they own and they don't know why they own it. You know, I had this conversation yesterday with a client who's worried about everything going on. And the client basically was concerned and wanted to know, what are we doing here? Because I think there's a the client thought there was a recession coming, right? And was concerned about everything that's going on in the, you know, with the tariffs and everything else, right? And my response was, well, we've done this and we've done this, not because of all this that's going on in the world today, but because of where we are in the economic cycle. But I said, the reality is that you have huge gains in your portfolio because you've owned these companies for the last, literally, as clients own them for the last 7 to 8 years, right? And we're not going to sell these businesses in your portfolio and pay capital gains because you want to raise cash during a recession. We are going to put pieces in place that allow you to raise cash in certain areas. They call that asset allocation, Matt, in case you forgot. And we're going to take that cash and we're going to take advantage of the recession to buy more of your business on sale. The client walked away just tickled pink. That's the power, by the way, we've talked about in the four keys of successful investing, about flexibility and transparency. The philosophy and strategy is the empirical part. The flexibility and the transparency is the emotional part. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, because investors view their portfolios more like a renter, not that they own businesses, but they're quote unquote invest in the stock market, that they view risk, they view volatility as risk. Therefore, having a what I would consider a lack of clarity in the decisions that they make as it pertains to their portfolio.
All right, renters, risk. Now, I'm very interested in how you're going to talk about predictions versus reliable returns.
Well, not reliable returns, but how about reliability? Reliable predictions.
Reliable predictions. Oh, I wrote that down wrong. I'm sorry. Okay, then you clarify.
Most investors, unfortunately, view predictions as reliable and engaging versus onerous and folly. I mean, how many times have you gone on the computer, looked at the markets and looked at all the headlines, sponsored ads that have these big, you know, ridiculous headlines, right? We think the Financial Press Corp desire to keep investors engaged. So to create these eyeballs and viewership, which of course then create what?
Revenue.
Emotional decisions.
Well, that and revenue for the company.
Of course.
Yeah.
Exactly. You mean they're doing that to sell stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Duh. Right? So when you have predictions, this is why we do our top 10 predictions every year. Remember we talked about in the previous podcast about
and that you've been right 98% of the time.
No, 100%. Easy now. Sorry. Easy now, Spanky. 100. That people rely on predictions. And I always go back to this question. I'll always say to people, have you ever looked at predictions and followed them? Yeah. Have you ever gone back to see if they were right? No. Right? We look at predictions all day long, but does anyone ever keep a scorecard in predictions? Don't you find it interesting?
Most people
forget about it. It's designed to provide an emotional reaction. Emotional reaction.
But isn't that the value that I should be expecting from my financial advisor, to be that buffer between my emotional reactions to headlines and news and the sky is falling, for you to be that buffer?
Agreed. They should. But financial advisors don't necessarily always know what they own and why they own it either.
Mm.
And as I go back to my original point, investors and financial advisors make decisions emotionally, and people get fearful when there's fear, uncertainty, and doubt.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. If you don't know what's going to happen, then you're subject to following the predictions, because you want to align the prediction with what you really think and feel. right? Mm-hmm. But you know that doesn't always work out, right? So predictions, people don't even pay attention whether they're right or not. They hear the prediction, they react to it, or it starts to shape a mental process, when the reality is, as business owners, continually investing in their businesses over time, as long as the long-term fundamentals haven't changed, should enhance, should, no guarantees, but should enhance their ability to invest and plan with success.
All right, the final R goes with the idea from the P and the pro of performance. And we've talked about benchmarks before. Where are we going with this?
Oh, yeah. Benchmarks. You know what I say about benchmarks, right?
Again, I don't think you can swear that much on the radio.
My belief is benchmarks are nothing more than an excuse for someone to justify their job.
Sure.
Because here's the thing. Benchmarks are historical data, right? Returns, right? Historical returns mm-hmm. are historical. And if you don't know how that return was garnered, how can you fully believe that that's the right way to compare or understand if your portfolio is doing the best it can? This is why we believe that the only benchmark should be the plan, should mm-hmm. be your financial plan, your investment goals, objectives, long-term for accomplishing their goals. Most investors unfortunately view the performance of their holdings versus an obscure benchmark as opposed to their own goals, right? And so the big three to hold power over investors: develop and maintain the rules game. So at the end of the day, people don't have any other sort of way. I mean, Matt, I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say, I have to use a benchmark. And I say, why do you have to use a benchmark? Because I don't have any other way of judging whether or not you've done a good job or not.
Right.
And I say, well, are you on track to have the kind of financial future you want to have? Well, yes. Okay. So how am I not doing a good job? Well, but maybe I can make more money doing this or doing that. I had some guy email me 7 stocks that have performed really well over the last 4 years and put amount of shares. And he wanted us to tell him how that portfolio would have done over the last 5 years versus his current portfolio. And I said, boy, if I could have had hindsight and picked all the best performing stocks over the last 5 years and owned them, I wouldn't be talking to any of you today.
Well, I want to pause you here because you keep talking about history and the two Nobel Prize winners who are involved in this asset allocation and all of that stuff, they're economists, so they're backward looking. But you have to say, and in fact, you've even said it on our podcast, that past performance is not what?
Well, we're required to say.
Well, I know that.
Past performance is no indication of future performance.
Right. So that statement alone negates benchmarking.
Bingo.
Holy crap.
So why do investors use it? Maybe, and maybe that's why investors are just going to the index. They're saying, you know what? Right. I'm not going to use a benchmark. The benchmark's the index. I'm just going to buy the index.
Right.
Which goes back to the original premise I said earlier mm-hmm. On the last podcast, which is it's not that people aren't willing to spend more money, invest more money, pay higher fees for things. That otherwise Mercedes, BMW, natural foods, high-end stuff wouldn't be around right now, right? Mm-hmm. There would be no Tiffany's. There would be no Nordstrom's. People are willing to pay for quality. People are willing to pay, in my opinion, for clarity. People, when they know what they own and why they own it, when their advisor is their guide that leads them down the road to Nepsis, the road to clarity, there is value you cannot put a dollar sign on. And as you just aptly said, benchmarks are historical in nature and do not guarantee the future performance. But when I know the businesses I own, maybe I become less emotionally attached to the markets and more emotionally attached to the businesses I own because I like those businesses and I know what those businesses are. And I want to own those businesses. And so when they go on sale, maybe I want to buy more of them.
All right,
my friend, you have gotten to the P&R of the four simple steps to investing like a pro.
All right. And then the next one, we're going to go over O. So give us a preview of the last letter of this acronym.
Oh, well, I gave a little tidbit earlier in the last two podcasts. Mm-hmm. Number one, owners. Number two, opportunistic. Number three, onerous. And number four, own terms.
I am personally really excited about how you're going to unpack the word onerous, because people just don't use that word very much anymore.
Right. Right.
But the only way that you're going to be able to find that out, everybody, is you're going to have to tune into the third part of the four simple steps to start investing like a pro. Mark, thanks, Bran.
Always good to be with you, boss.
All right. Make sure that you have subscribed to the podcast. That way, when we come out this third part of this mini series, it'll show up directly on your listening device. And once again, if you know anybody who needs to hear this stuff, get it out there. Click the share button. Super, super easy. And that way you can share your wisdom with your friends and family. For everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis, Inc., an SEC-registered investment advisor.